This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant. Sorry.
Kevin Durant. You Kevin Durant, mate? Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go. Right.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Dunk.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me, Weston Shepherd of Up the Thunder. Weston, what's up, man?
Oh, you know, hanging out, trying to survive the time change. How are you?
No, the daylight savings is the dumbest thing. Can we not get rid of it?
No, I tried. I wrote a letter just to anybody that I thought would be responsive. I have no luck so far.
It's insanity. But here we are. We're here anyways, talking about the Thunder.
As we do.
There was an article written on ESPN.com, and I think it's going in the magazine. It's got this really awesome picture of Russell Westbrook dribbling a basketball, wearing this like leopard print shirt and some super tight jeans. He looks right. Awesome, and the article is awesome as well. So you should check it out. But Weston, what did you take away from this article today?
You know, it's always interesting to get a different perspective at Russ. Like we've said, it's a lot of negative narratives surrounding him. So whenever you can kind of get a look at who he is and how he's really still kind of an underdog, even this far into his career and what he's doing, I appreciate those looks and kind of letting people in on, you know, his story and what he's really like.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, the underdog thing is really interesting because he's now like kind of an ultimate underdog with this Thunder team. He's got all these super young guys around him, and the article talks about how a lot of people didn't expect him to have this kind of success, but he's doing it. I mean, the Thunder have a negative net rating, and they're still at 37-29 right now, which is really impressive, and it's all because of Russell Westbrook. I think he's really been misunderstood and continues to be misunderstood as his career continues to go. But this is a really kind of good kind of inside look at him and a good look at the numbers. Also, what's kind of outside the numbers? Because I feel like the only talk right now is about Russ's triple doubles, but it gives a little bit of a glimpse as to like the other things that he's doing. And I think Taj Gibson has also been a good voice for that, because since he's come to the Thunder, he's had a lot of positive things to say about Russ.
I don't know how you could ever actually have a negative thing to say about Russ if you watch him on a nightly basis. But, you know, with him and how he's always been, he doesn't necessarily want to be understood. I think we all kind of learned that whenever he, you know, signed his extension of, we all thought it was gone for basically his entire career so far. So, you know, it's been this process of, okay, we don't actually know anything about this guy except that he's really good at basketball. He's terrifying. He screams a lot. But you know, learning a little bit more about him and just, you know, what he's gone through and starting to, I guess, peel back that onion of what makes him go. It's always interesting. And anytime you can get looks like that in ESPN, so with the national media or, you know, just fans of basketball that don't necessarily get to watch him all that often, I appreciate, because maybe they can see a little bit more of what we see 82 games.
Yeah, and with Durant leaving, we've really gotten to see a lot more of that, and it really uncovered the fact that maybe Russell Westbrook is what we thought Durant was the whole time. And because Russ wears funny clothes, like, everybody just thought, oh, look at the clothes he wears, he's going to LA or he's going to play in New York. But I think Russell Westbrook just holds almost all of like the core values that we thought Durant held, which is kind of a weird kind of storyline within this.
Yeah, you know, just from a loyalty aspect, he's certainly who we thought Durant was the entire time. And, you know, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know, you know, if he intends to stay forever or, you know, if he wants to sign an extension this summer or what. But, you know, it's pretty clear at this point that we were wrong about him pretty much the entire time. And he is more of that, you know, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to win here or I'm not kind of guy that we always hoped Durant was going to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I expect Russell to stay with the Thunder, and I expect the Thunder to continue to get better. And they it looked like we were heading for a really awful weekend whenever the Thunder had that four-game skid. But they beat San Antonio, which I thought was a good win. Not a fully healthy San Antonio team, but they still beat them. And then they beat Utah on Saturday. The Thunder played at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which was super weird. Rudy Gobert didn't play. Derek Favors didn't play. But the Thunder still played a good game, really up until like the fourth quarter, because it was the game was over. The Jazz had conceded the game, and they just played their scrubs the rest of the way. And the Thunder, like, surprisingly struggled with that. I don't know if it was just like, we all know this game is over, let's not worry about it. And then Howell Neto did not want the game to be over and just like, went bonkers. It was weird. But the Thunder did end up winning. So I don't know. What do you think about this team moving forward? There's a Twitter question that we're going to go through from that True Talk, basically asking, do you think they can win 50 games?
I don't know if 50 games is still on the table, just because, you know, these last two games were fantastic. Love seeing them beat the Spurs and the Jazz, obviously, two teams that are, you know, higher than us in the Western Conference standings. But, you know, we also had the four games leading up to that. So it's kind of like this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde team that we root for. It's you never know what you're going to get when it comes to the team. So, you know, we go on the road here. We've got the Nets and the Raptors, and then home against the Kings this week. And, you know, I'm expecting them to 2-1, 3-0, you know, optimistically. But you never know. It's interesting. It's still the same team that lost to the Mavericks, you know, a week ago. So you just have to kind of just feel it out. And I think that's kind of been the story of the season, is every time we get too far ahead of ourselves, you know, we have to temper our expectations. And every time things get really bad, they come back and shock us and beat the Spurs. So it's a game-by-game basis, and I try not to get too emotionally invested one way or the other.
Right, and they'll have to go 13-3 to get 50 games going forward, which, their schedule is pretty soft, and you can kind of see that happening. But they've got I kind of mapped out the schedule, and I think that they're going to finish closer to 47-35, which is where a lot of people pegged them at the beginning of the season. So they've got to beat Toronto on the road. They have to beat Golden State at home. They have to beat Houston on the road. They have to beat San Antonio at home again, Memphis on the road. And then there's really not any other games that are that difficult. Like, you have Brooklyn, Sacramento, Philadelphia, Dallas, Orlando, Charlotte, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Denver, Minnesota, and Denver. It's like, those are all winnable games, but I can promise you they're not going to win all of those.
Right, that's the thing. 13-3 would be difficult to do. You know, if the team that played the first 3.5 quarters against Utah shows up for 16 games, then by all means, 50 is on the table. But I don't want to hold them to 50. I don't necessarily think if they, like you said, finish at 47-35, 48-34, that's a good season. And you know, whether you make it to 50 or not, they've done impressive things. Those four games that we lost over the course of the past week, that's probably going to end up being the difference. But, yeah, you know, it is what it is at this point. And if they get to 50, I wouldn't be surprised. And I also wouldn't be surprised if they don't.
Right. And they play Minnesota the second to last game of the season, which is it's kind of an important game for seeding, because all these teams are going to be super close, 4 through 7, and then the 8th seed will be whatever that is.
Right.
The Timberwolves have the fourth best net rating in the league since the All-Star break, and the Mavericks have the fifth best since the All-Star break, and the Nuggets have the sixth best. So
nothing makes sense.
I know. So there, and you know, do you have any idea who the first in net rating is since the All-Star break?
Goodness, I have no idea.
Think about,
you're gonna have to tell me.
Think about my favorite player from the team last season. He's playing very well. He has a very small contract.
You're telling me the Miami Heat.
Yes, Miami Heat.
That is insane.
9.6 net rating. An offensive rating of 111. Defensive rating of 101.
Hey, they've all moved to Waiters Island, and they're just thriving.
I love Deion so much.
I know.
Shout out to Deion. I wish he could be doing this year, but, you know, I love him wherever he's at.
You have to. He's just not self-aware at all. He, you know, he's Kobe Wade. He's, you know, just an anomaly, and I love every bit of it.
He's the best. He's shooting like 46% from three in this.
It's just ridiculous.
Oh, man. He's a superstar. Always knew
it. He's going to go get that max contract he's been after for, you know, his entire career.
Man, that's going to be a really fascinating thing this summer, is what is Deion going to get? Because if he keeps this up, and like, say Miami like pushes Cleveland or Toronto or Boston to like six or seven games, and Deion's like the reason why, what are teams going to do with themselves? It's going to be really fascinating, because he could not get a contract last summer.
No, it's really worth anything.
I don't know.
Whoever decides, you know, we're going to pay Deion Waiters, they're going to hand him that contract with their eyes closed and just, you know, fingers crossed, hope for the best. It's, you know, like, if it's this season, Deion, that you're getting moving forward, then it's totally worth it. But goodness, he is something else.
He might be the ultimate contract year guy. And he just feels like a contract year guy, like a Baron Davis or a Steven Jackson or Monte Ellis or somebody like that, that just plays out of their head for, you know, the season before they get this big deal, and then he might be OKC Deion the rest of the way.
Well, right. Someone just needs to offer him a really huge one-year deal. Yes. So he's forced to take it and also be, you know, contract year Deion for another season.
One-year deals forever for Deion.
Hey, why not?
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank someone else who is as awesome as Deion Waiters, Chicken Express. Right now, their special is... This is insane. This is all for $6.99. Two tenders, one fish, one side, one drink, a biscuit or a roll, two hush puppies for $6.99. Tell me where you can get a better deal, Weston.
You can't get a better deal.
You can't do it.
Just nowhere.
Go to Chicken Express. Locations are all over Oklahoma and Texas and the surrounding states. Delicious food, great tenders, really good sides. Go check out Chicken Express.
Unreal.
Totally unreal. They're so good. I wanted to talk about triple doubles, and my friend Mikey Barra, who he lives in Italy. He's a huge Thunder fan, really good with stats, sent me this spreadsheet of triple doubles, and I wanted to kind of run through the stats. So these are all since 1983. This is all from Basketball Reference. So Russell Westbrook is tied for fourth all-time winning percentage when he has a triple-double. So 85% of the time the Thunder win when Russ gets a triple-double. The only guys that are better are Scottie Pippen, 86% of the time they won when he got a triple-double. And this was only in 18 wins for Pippen. Russell Westbrook already has 63 wins.
Goodness
so it's gracious. A smaller sample size. David Robinson, same thing, really small sample size, 87% with 13 wins. And then Draymond Green has 20 wins off of triple-doubles, and he's never lost when he has a triple-double, which makes sense, but we don't have to even acknowledge that anymore. So,
and I won't.
Russell Westbrook has the same winning percentage as Larry Bird. When the Thunder win, it's at 85%. He's doing great things, and we addressed this a little bit on Friday, that people want to talk about like his empty numbers, and it's just absolute garbage to think that his triple doubles are empty stats. I think the win percentage speaks for itself, and these are his win percentage all time. So whenever he was getting triple doubles when he was younger, the Thunder were still winning at a really high clip. And I don't understand the mentality that these numbers are shallow or they don't mean anything. What are your thoughts on just like the triple double spree and then the narrative around it?
The triple double spree in itself, I mean, it's just insane. We're talking about guys like Wilt Chamberlain on a regular basis and Oscar Robertson. It's mind boggling to really think about. In terms of empty numbers, what is the team 26-6 this season when he gets one?
Yes.
I don't, you know, that's not an empty stat. It's, you know, the stat. It's why the Thunder has any shot at all moving forward, and, you know, why they're in sixth place right now. It cannot be an empty stat if it directly affects the team winning. You know, take every other argument out, doesn't matter. The team wins when he gets a triple double, and he knows that. So I don't understand the argument, and I think you guys touched on it on Friday. it's becoming so normal that people are trying to rationalize it, or, you know, trying to, well, this, that. But he's getting a triple-double all the time. He's averaging a triple-double. He has a really great opportunity to average one over the course of an entire season. We shouldn't make that, you know, commonplace. That's not a normal thing. It may never happen again. So, you know, the empty stat stuff, Russ has been, you know, hated on by the media or whoever his entire career. I think it's just an extension of that. People don't necessarily like the way he plays the game. So I think that's just trying to take away from him because they have to take away from him no matter what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's only three other players since 1983 that have averaged more points while getting triple doubles. And that's James Harden, LeBron James, and Michael Jordan. Those are the only guys.
I'll take that company.
Yeah, he's at 27.1 points per game when he averages, or when he gets a triple double, and that's even with like Magic Johnson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Charles Barkley, Kobe Bryant, KG, Grant Hill. Whenever Grant Hill was really good, Chris Webber,
so good.
So I mean, it's crazy, and guys like, I mean, Gary Payton. I mean, he didn't have a ton of triple doubles, but the Sonics only won 53% of the time when he got a triple double, and he only averaged 22 points whenever he got a triple double. So I'm not trying to take away anything from Gary Payton when I say that, but I am just trying to say, like, Russell Westbrook is all time great, and this is an all time great season. And if we miss that, if you decide to criticize him or you decide to Tom Haberstroh Westbrook, like, you're just missing out, because this has been spectacular, and you should be watching Russell Westbrook because he's been really fun. And I don't know if there's a more fun guy to watch in the league on his own. I think maybe probably the Rockets are more fun to watch as a team, but to see what he can do just on his own is incredible.
Yeah, you know, if you decide that what Russ is doing is not impressive, if you have to find a way to hate on that, I feel like as a basketball fan, you're missing out, like you said. It's just, you know, I've watched the game my entire life. I can't say that I've ever had more fun watching anyone play, and obviously I'm biased because it's the team that I'm passionate about, but, you know, this guy is just losing his mind, like, every second of every single game that he plays, even the games we lose. I mean, he's just full out, you know, reckless abandon. It's incredible that he's been able to keep the energy level all season long, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And triple doubles or not, it's just a lot of fun. Like, how could you not have a blast watching this guy?
Yeah. Let's just make basketball fun again. I think a lot of people like to nitpick basketball so much and nitpick the NBA. Like, let's just, can this not be fun? Like, I don't know. Sometimes it's exhausting, to be honest.
Right. No, yeah. And, you know, if you root for the Rockets or you think James Harden should be MVP, you have to, at this point in time, you have to actively knock Russell Westbrook. You can't just say, I think Harden should be MVP because X. It has to be because X and Russ sucks. You just can't appreciate everybody at the same time, which is unfortunate because, you know, there's a lot of guys doing things that should be appreciated, Russell Westbrook being at the top of that list.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the best MVP races that we've had in a long, long time. And Harden is deserving. Westbrook is deserving. LeBron James is deserving. All those guys deserve to be in the conversation, deserve to even win it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what voters are going to do. Because, I mean, Westbrook, I think that, I mean, I'm for sure I'm biased, and I don't know how you could expect me to be anything but when we get to watch him every single game he plays. But I think that he's carrying a heavier load than those other guys are. So if that's something, a lot of people factor that in. What would happen to the Thunder if Westbrook wasn't on it? If that's how you judge the MVP, he's the MVP, period. I think you're just splitting hairs between these guys, and I wouldn't be upset if any of them won it over Russ.
Yeah, you know, I wish I could agree with that. I do feel like I'd be upset, and obviously I think Harden has an absolutely deserving case, especially last night, triple-double, beats the Cavs, you know, takes LeBron.
Incredible.
It's a great game, you know, and that's one of those games where after two really solid games by Russ, you go, ah, oh, crap, well, here he is again, like, here we go. But, you know, to your point, if it all comes down to defining the word valuable, I don't understand how anyone could be more valuable than Russ, just because I do think it's a lottery team. You know, one of the, I don't want to say it, but maybe one of the worst teams in the league if Russ isn't on it. So if being the sixth seed and not winning 50 games is the reason why he doesn't win MVP, I don't necessarily get that just because I think the difference that he makes.
Oh, yeah. And the thing with the Thunder is that there's, like, no other playmakers on the team. I mean, probably the second best playmaker is Oladipo, and he doesn't have a high assist percentage this season. And then maybe your third is, like, maybe Steven Adams, maybe Enes Kanter. Like, what's – I don't know. I mean, like, neither of those guys are facilitators, and that's where just the heavy load falls on Westbrook. Right.
Yeah, and, you know, I hope we never have to do this again. Like, I hope that, you know, as the team grows and Presti has more time, you know, in the post-Durant era, that, you know, more help is on the way and you find those playmakers and Russ never has to carry this burden again. Like, if this is the last time he averages a triple-double, that's fine with me if that means that, you know, the team is better. But for what he's doing right now in this season with what he has, it's just – it's unbelievable.
Right, and – if this team comes back relatively the same, I think that we'll just see more of the same, because in order for this team to win, he's got to rebound. And in order for this team to win, he's got to get others involved, because no one else is going to do it. Like, and nope. I think that they obviously do have good rebounders, but for them to get into an efficient offense, he's got to rebound and go. He just does. And if people want to say that that's empty because there are uncontested rebounds, you can say that, but I also would appreciate it if you'd watch him instead of just looking at the stat and sorting the stat out on ESPN or stats.nba.com.
Right. Watch one Thunder game, and I think it will change your mind. And obviously, we haven't performed well on national television, which is part of it, because we've lost some very winnable games when the whole world is watching. But at the same time, that San Antonio game was a great example. Yeah. And, you know, just – show the guys some love.
I think I said I wouldn't really be upset if Harden won it. And I think I would. I don't think that I would be. But I do think I would be upset if like a guy like Kawhi Leonard won it. Because I mean, Kawhi's not shouldering the same kind of load. I know that he's playing really good defense. I know that he has been able to score really well. But he's not like the facilitator of their offense. He's definitely their go-to scorer. But I don't know. His late push, I hope that people don't take to it as much as they did last week, because I don't think he's quite as deserving as these other two guys.
No. In terms of guys that are carrying a team that would be nowhere close to where they are without him, you know, it's Harden and Russ, and then at that point, all bets are off. But yeah, I'm with you on Kawhi. I think he's impressive. I think he's, you know, great, but I don't really buy his MVP candidacy, even though he did finish second last year. So you kind of have to, you know, people like what he does, and obviously it's all great, but it's just not the same for me.
And he's very, very good, but he just hasn't had the same kind of special season that those two have had.
No, which, you know, this could be where Kawhi gets stuck. He could have seasons like this from here on out, and just because of who he is and how he is and who he plays for, it may not ever get the sort of recognition that it deserves, but in comparison to the other candidates, it's not the same.
Right. Let's do some Twitter questions. This is from @_Novacane. He asks, during this last Jazz matchup, do you believe this is how Oladipo should have performed throughout the season?
That's difficult. Obviously, I would love for Oladipo to perform like that on a regular basis. 20-plus in back-to-back games. He's shooting really well from three. And the team is 12-3 when he scores 20-plus. So I would love for that to be regular Depo. I think he still has to figure out when to be aggressive. He seems like he's starting to figure that out. I would love to say that that's how Depot should have been and what we should have expected from him, but I still don't know if he and Westbrook are on the same level to the point where we should expect that from him yet.
Yeah, his scoring has really picked up since he came back. I think that his wrist was really bothering him before the All-Star break, and his shooting numbers had kind of shown that. I don't know, the expectation is that he would be this kind of player. That's what people thought before the season started, is that he would come in, he'd average 20 points a game, closer to like 4 or 5 assists a game, because the Thunder need playmaking badly, and when Russ is off the court, you know, he should have the green light, and they should be staggering the rotations that way. But Billy Donovan really hadn't done that. He played Samaje Christian, I think he played 17 minutes the other night just at point guard. And I know I don't get that. I'm just like watching him play. I'm like, did Billy Donovan lose a bet? Like, what is going on here? They really want to get a good look at him. And maybe I'm not seeing something, but I just don't get it. Like, I think he's a decent defender. I don't think he's like a world class, like Patrick Beverley point guard defender. He's not a shooter. He's really not that great a passer. I don't see it. Do you see anything that makes sense as to why he's like in the rotation right now?
No, and to his credit, I think he's played better the last 5 games than I'd seen before that. But the whole Norris Cole thing has been confusing. It's like he showed up, played on his first night in uniform, and now he's gone. I don't understand what happened there. Like, why is Kristen back in full force all of a sudden? I expected him to hit third on the point guard or on the rotation there, but I don't know. He's confusing. It's one of those things. It's I felt like we moved Sabonis to the bench in order to put the best product on the floor and try to win games. In my opinion, that's, you know, Kristen should fall out of the rotation if we're trying to win as many games as we can. But like you said, maybe Billy D lost a bet and we just don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. So in these 3 games, and this is obviously a small sample size for Oladipo, he's averaging 19 points. On 55% from the field, it's at 66% from 3 on 5 attempts per game. So he's hitting a little bit over three threes per game. He's still not getting to the free throw line, which I think is a really big problem. But he is hitting those shots at a better clip. He's at 85% since the All-Star break. He's still only at 2 assists per game, 1 turnover. So he's been really good. But there's just some things that separate Oladipo from being like this, like, you know, fringe all-star type of player or just like a role player. And if he could figure out a way to get to the free throw line some more, which he's very capable of doing, but he just doesn't do. And if he could dish out a few more assists, which he's also capable of doing. So I think if he could do those things, he could be like this second star for the Thunder. But he doesn't. He's basically he's been more of a 3-and-D guy, and I think that he's kind of separated himself from that in these 3 games because he has been taking guys off the dribble and he's been doing a little bit more. But still, there's just a lot left on the table, I feel like, for Oladipo, and I'm hoping that he can develop those parts of his game.
Yeah, you know, whenever the Thunder traded for him, I was worried about a little bit of skill set redundancy with him and Russ. Obviously, he's not the same type of player Russ is on a talent level, but just their games were similar. Been really shocked at how good he's been in catch and shoot. That aggression that you saw a lot in Orlando is gone. And like you said, the assist numbers are down. I think he's averaging close to the lowest amount of assists in his career, and definitely down from last year in Orlando. So he even made a comment, it was offhand a few weeks ago, it takes a lot of time to learn how to play alongside someone like Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. So I think that's he's still trying to figure out when to be aggressive, how to be aggressive, how to play his game alongside Russ. And you know, as the season goes along, especially like you said, now that he's had some time off, he said the back injury was actually great for his wrist. So I'm hoping with some health that he's starting to figure that out and we'll get some more of the depot that we all expected and hoped for at the very least.
Yeah, really the only thing that's up for him is his 3-pointers and his percentages. Shooting a career-high 37% from 3 on 5 attempts per game. He had never had more than 3.9 attempts per game, so that's great. And the Thunder needed that and need it now badly. But his free throw attempts, career low. He was averaging 4.4 attempts in 2014-15, which still isn't great, but it's much better. He's also a career low in assists. And I think you're right. Like, playing with Russell Westbrook is a lot different than playing with Elfrid Payton.
It is.
And I think the same thing can be said for Doug McDermott. The same thing can be said for Taj Gibson. Although Gibson and Russ really started to figure things out, especially against Utah, they were using Gibson a lot until he went out with his hip injury, which I guess he's going to be okay. But he had 15 points in that game, and they were really Russ is really starting to figure out where Gibson likes to get the ball, and he was pretty incredible against the Jazz, although the Jazz were not the Jazz. They were
Jeff Withey
Jazz.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad he's getting some run, but especially against us.
Yeah. I know. Let's look at some other Twitter questions. This is from @easy_dooley. Do you think the Thunder can keep Dre if he keeps playing offense like he did post All-Star game?
I think that whole hug gate that we had right there at the deadline, where the whole world thought Dre was being traded because he hugged somebody. To me, that was product of, at least this is what I thought, product of a discussion taking place of, listen, we want to keep you here. And this is what we're thinking. Are you willing to accept that, or at least, you know, get us in the door to have those discussions? I think that was a productive conversation, and I think those hugs were maybe a little bit of, hey, we're on the same page here. Maybe that's just wishful thinking, but I certainly think it's possible to keep him this off season, even with him playing the way that he has been recently. I mean, what is it? It's just ridiculous. He's shooting 42% from three post All-Star game. Like, what is going on? But, you know, he's also shooting 42% from the free throw line. Like, there's still major holes in his game. So can he go out and get a big contract from someone? Yes, absolutely. But I don't know if the team can maximize him the way that the Thunder can. I do think that, you know, you need a little bit more firepower on offense from that position. So if they decide to go in a different direction, I wouldn't be shocked. But I think Presti would have traded him if he didn't think that they had a really good shot at keeping him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Presti just traditionally doesn't like guys going into restricted free agency. And I'm hoping that this is finally the guy that takes the Thunder hometown discount. Because the Thunder really haven't been able to get that guy. I mean, Reggie Jackson was obviously not willing to do that. Enes Kanter wasn't willing to do it. Steven Adams maybe did a little bit.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen. Like, Oladipo's contract seems very fair to me. But he may have taken a small discount. But the Thunder haven't gotten, like, the Danny Green crazy discount where Green could have been making, you know, 16, 17 million a year, but he took 10.
Right.
So is Robertson going to take, you know, 12 million, 15 million, or is he going to do, like, 8 million? If the Thunder could get him on an 8 million per for the next 4 years, I think they would be ecstatic. And I think that they should be, because he's a really elite defender. I still don't love the fit with him next to Russ, especially when you don't have a lot of offensive firepower at the other positions. But he's super valuable to this team. He's really a part of the core that the Thunder have currently. But it just remains to be seen. It takes one team. It takes one team to offer Solomon Hill $12 million a year. It takes one team to offer Robertson $15 million a year. And will that team step up? Will the Brooklyn Nets offer him, you know, $15 million per for 4 years? At that point, I just don't know if you can do that if you're the Thunder. You have too many guys that are going to be making high dollar amounts. And I don't know. I don't know where that line is, but I just don't think you can pay Andre Robertson that kind of deal.
No, by no means. I do think there's a point where you have to walk away. Obviously, they were willing to go and match for Ennis whenever he signed his offer sheet with Portland. I think that was more of a necessity at that point in time. But I just don't know if you can wrap up that sort of cap with somebody that is really good. Obviously, he's elite on defense, but someone that just, like you said, doesn't really make a ton of sense alongside Russell Westbrook. So, like you said, if he can get the hometown discount, if he's willing to do that, you know, play for a team that he's always played for and obviously gets a lot of opportunity that I don't know he would get elsewhere, sure, I would love to keep him. But, you know, that 42% three-point shooting since the break, that's not going to stay there. It's just sustainable.
It's going away very soon.
Yeah, I mean, it has to, right?
42% since the All-Star break. He's at plus 2.9 when he's on the court, which makes sense because he really is that good on the other side of the ball.
So good.
I just think that his ultimate destiny, in my mind, is doing what he did in the playoffs for the Thunder last season, where he's basically your functional four or five on offense, and then you have the other guys spread out. And he can set a pretty good pick, and he's really not that bad on a pick and roll. You're not going to, obviously, he's not the guy that you want to be running that with. No. he can play make just a little bit, but they just have to find other ways to use him rather than parking him in the corner. And that's the kind of tough thing, because that's what wings do. Like, wings are supposed to spread the court. And so you're going to have to use them in a really untraditional way. And the Thunder have done that in spots. And I don't know where this goes. If Andre Robertson's a part of your core, I don't know where it goes.
I don't either. And I've always thought that Dre was a luxury on a team with Kevin Durant on it, and now it's just a little bit more tricky. So I don't think he would still be here if they didn't have a discussion and say, all right, this is what we want to do in the offseason. Let's try to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But again, to your point, someone could throw him a lot of money, and you know, I wouldn't be shocked either way, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't think his play here after the All-Star game is going to be a big deciding factor either way.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to be the evaluation tool that they use.
No.
This question is from at BP2097. It says, Donovan discussed using Vic, Ennis, plus Domas in lineups without Russell Westbrook. How do they work together or fit? Is this our new bench?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess so. I still get a little hung up at the point guard. I don't really want Samaj running it. I would rather have Oladipo do it or Norse Cole. But I think one thing that is tricky there is I like when the offense, when the second unit runs through the post with Kanter. I don't really want to put a ton of ball handlers or guys that need the ball on the court with him at the same time, because I still think that offense should run through Ennis at the post, allow him to make a pass or score, because he's really good at that. He's been surprisingly good at that. His eyes are up. He's always looking. So I really think the second unit should focus on the best way to maximize what Ennis Kanter is good at, and that's getting him the ball down there and going from there.
Yeah, I agree. And it's either that or you're running it through Oladipo. And I think like a mix of those two makes a lot of sense. I really do like it, and I think that instead of playing Samaj, like, throw Doug McDermott out there, throw Alex Abrines out there. I just don't understand the value that they think those other guys are going to bring. I just think 3-point shooting is going to be way more important to that second unit, especially since, I mean, Sabonis isn't taking that many threes. Post All-Star break, Sabonis is only taking 1.2 threes per game, and some of that's his minutes have been down. But other than that, I think that he's taking more shots close to the rim.
Where he needs to be.
Yes, where he needs to be, at least for now. And he's been a lot better, I feel like, since he's moved to the bench. Whenever he starts, he's at a plus-minus 0.7. When Sabonis has been on the bench, it's only been for two games, but against two quality opponents, he's at a plus 1.5. So ultimately, I don't know how successful a Kanter-Sabonis front line can be, but it's worked so far, and I think that he can defend a little bit better than even I think he can. And
I believe that.
I'm interested to see what he can do for the rest of the season, because he's been a little bit better there. He seems to be more aggressive, and he's playing against guys that I think that he can exploit a little bit more. So I think Sabonis is a guy to watch really closely for the rest of the season, because I think that his play, and I think that this is probably true for nobody else but him, his play down the stretch is going to determine whether he plays in the playoffs. Because I do think that they have guys that can play. I think Jeremy Grant is a little bit better now, although he was awful against Utah.
Very bad.
I mean, just
very bad.
He was the worst player on the court. And there was a guy named Joel Bolomboy on the court, and he was better than...
No one knows who that is.
Right. He was better than Jeremy Grant the other night. So I think that his play going forward is going to determine what happens in the playoffs. I'm not sure that Samaj or Norris Cole can do a whole lot to get themselves a lot of playoff run. I'm hoping that they just completely eliminate those guys from the rotation. But I do think that there's, like, 10 minutes of, like, backup power forward available, and it's going to come down to Jeremy Grant or Sabonis. And if Sabonis can show himself to be a quality bench guy, I think that they may give it to him. And it's also going to be very much based on matchups.
Right.
But I think that Sabonis could show over these last 16 games that he's a little bit better than what he showed starting.
Yeah. Well, you know, the pressure's off now, and he's not in the starting lineup, and I think the concern there was, is this going to negatively affect his mindset, you know, starting for 60 plus and then getting moved to the bench? It doesn't seem like that's going to be an issue at all. He seems like he's a little bit more relaxed, a little more willing to get aggressive. I think if he can earn those minutes, then I'm all for it. I don't necessarily think the difference between him and Grant is that great either way, just because I think from an IQ standpoint that Sabonis gives you more. Grant is, you know, probably obviously he's more athletic and maybe a little bit better of a rim defender, but it's kind of up in the air, and I think those minutes are certainly his for the taking.
Yeah, I agree with that. From at Drinking Tea, who hates Russ the most, Cowherd, Bill Simmons, or Coach Nick at B-Ball Breakdown?
You know, I think Simmons has more of just an Oklahoma City Thunder problem. I know that he's been a little critical of Russ, but that's just, it seems like he's more against all of us. And I don't really keep up with B-Ball Breakdown a lot. So what Colin Cowherd has been doing recently is really upsetting to me on a deeply emotional level. I don't know if you keep up, like, on Twitter, it is just ridiculous. They keep posting these snippets and videos from his show where he is just awful in regards to Russ. And I you know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's like, do you even watch the Thunder? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what he thinks is happening in Oklahoma City, but his takes on Russ are just atrocious.
He's
so I'm going quoting, with Howard here.
He's even quoting false stats. Like, he's... Yeah, I think he said
he's
he was
fake
like
news.
I think he was, said he was 44th in net rating. It's like, that's not true.
You can't just make stuff up.
Where did you get that from?
See, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's been bad. And Coward, that's just kind of how he operates. Like, he's just there, he's trying to drum up stuff. And he knows
right.
that he just says stuff. I don't know how much he believes it. That's where I'm just like, I don't know how much he really hates him. Because it's his job to drum up interest for
right.
his site. And I think the number one guy is Coach Nick. He has hated on Russ throughout almost his entire career. And the thing is that I don't know that he's doing it to drum up interest, because I don't know how much interest is really drumming up, because like you say, like you don't even know
what, I'm familiar, what he's, but you know what, I'm saying,
what he's saying. But he's hated on Russ's game for a long time. And he's one of these, like, quote-unquote basketball purists. And he doesn't like this, like, pure athlete just, like, dominating. And it's, like, can we not just give credit where credit's due?
Right.
Like, what's the problem with that?
You know, but that's, you know, it's, Russ has had a lot of people like that from day one. So it's not surprising to hear. I'm not with you on the basketball purist thing, or with Coach Nick, I guess. What does it matter?
Right.
He is what the team needs him to be, and you know that's good basketball.
Yeah, exactly. And Bill Simmons, I mean, I used to be a huge Bill Simmons fan, and the last like 4 or 5 years, I feel like he's kind of fallen off in his NBA analysis, since his role has basically expanded to like doing everything for his website instead of just like
right.
being a part of ESPN. So like, I don't blame him for that, but I just think that his analysis has gotten lazy. And I still think he gives Westbrook some respect that he deserves. But this is also a person that doesn't read or listen to his podcasts anymore, just kind of hearing the grapevine, what he's saying. And I don't know. I think some of his stuff has some merit, but I also don't agree with that, like, being your main point.
Yeah, Simmons is kind of like Rick Riley to me. Yeah. Really enjoy reading what they write, but whenever I see their face and hear them speak, I'm just not into it anymore.
Yeah.
So if they, like, whenever they earned or I guess were perceived TV time is kind of where they lost me, and that's kind of how I feel about Bill Simmons. Speed writing, I'm into it. It's entertaining. I don't always agree with it, but man, the podcasts and stuff, just no thanks.
Yeah, they're brutal. Last question from @Caleb_Jones_. With Durant out, Aldridge out indefinitely, and Favors dealing with an injury, right now, rank the West.
I've thought about this one a little bit, and it's kind of a weak answer, but I'm not really sure that I change much. I'm curious about Aldridge. I don't really know how long he's out. Obviously, right. I didn't check anything today to see if anything was updated there. But as of yesterday, it was just indefinitely. So I don't know if that's something that we should plan on for the playoffs, which would obviously change things at that point. I would probably slide Houston above San Antonio. But I don't know if I can realistically take Golden State out of the one spot just because of how much firepower they have. I know that they've been slipping a little bit late, but you know, whenever you've got three all-stars, I think you tend to figure it out.
Yeah.
Utah, I still think they're good, and I don't think Favors is going to be out a long time. They seem pretty set in the four right now. I think I kind of leave it where it is, with maybe Houston sliding up into the two spot being my only change.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You can't really move these teams all that much, even with those injuries. I hate Golden State, but yeah, their team is still super stacked, and
yeah.
You know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson not hitting threes, that's going to change.
It will change, yeah.
It just will. Utah is still very good. They were without, right. I mean, I think Rudy Gobert might be their most impactful player. I think Gordon Hayward's their best player. I think that Gobert impacts the game a little bit more on the defensive end. He changes them from a team that is not that great, and, you know, the Thunder put up 70 points by the third quarter. Against the Jazz. With Gobert, that's not happening.
No.
So I think that you're right. The Jazz are three. What do we think about the Clippers? I mean, the Clippers definitely have more talent than the Thunder.
I just don't buy the Clippers. Like, healthy or not, I have a really hard time buying the Clippers. They just seem to fall at the most inopportune times. I don't necessarily, obviously, standings-wise, Oklahoma City is could possibly catch them, but I don't necessarily think that the Thunder is better than them at this particular point in time.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think Blake and Chris are enough, and then you add DeAndre Jordan, who's still really, really good. Right. They're better, but you're right. I mean, at this point, I have no idea what's going to happen with them this offseason. Chris Paul has said that he's going to commit to them, but if they lose in the first round or in the second round and don't get to the conference finals again, which it doesn't seem likely at all that that's where they're going to end up, I mean, that narrative is just so strong that, like, Chris Paul can't get to the conference finals. And it's going to be louder, and it'll be interesting to see what those guys do.
Yeah, because, I mean, they've got decisions to make with Blake as well. Obviously, you bring him back if he wants to come back, and he's done the same thing that CP3's done. I'm coming back, but like you said, you know, I think Kevin Durant was a pretty good example of what happens if you start listening to what people say.
Yeah.
A little too much. And if they don't make the Western Conference Finals, they're definitely going to hear a lot of it.
Yeah. And J.J. Redick,
I think,
too.
What is it? Yeah, Redick. Yeah, Redick is a free agent as well. So.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. So, yeah, I think that you can probably leave at least 1 through 5 the same. I think OKC at 6 makes sense. Memphis has been really, really bad.
So bad.
I think they have the worst defense since the All-Star break. I'll have to double check that, but I think they've...
It should never happen, but...
No! They've been really bad, so I think... I mean, I don't know. I think with how Memphis has played, I don't think they even should be at 7 if we're ranking them, like, today, like how they're playing today. I think the Blazers probably step up there. I think that the Mavericks are in the mix. I think Denver's still in the mix, even though they haven't been great as of late. But the top of the West should kind of hold, with, like you said, with Houston moving up. Houston's gonna be dangerous, man. If they can, if they have their shot going, they could be in the finals. Like last night, last night could have been a finals preview, which is kind of weird to say, but it definitely could be. If Durant can't go, man, they are so tough to defend. And when Harden's got it going, there's really nobody that can stop him. Certainly, there's nobody on. I guess Andre Iguodala would be the guy to guard him, but are they going to play him enough minutes for it to matter? I mean, they'd have to. And we all saw what Iguodala looked like last season whenever he was super tired in the finals. I mean, right. I don't. He is, and it's going to. I don't know. Houston's dangerous. I don't. I mean, if the playoffs started with Durant hurt and the timetable didn't look good, I'd probably pick the Rockets to win the West.
It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Obviously, you never want anyone to be hurt. I don't want Kevin to be hurt. But, you know, from an interest standpoint, if that's how the playoffs start, it's going to be insane to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Weston, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at WShep. And we can follow, of course, Up the Thunder. If you're not following them, I know that you are, but if you're not, by chance, you should be following Up the Thunder because they put out some really good stuff. Really hilarious tweets. Also, their website has some good writing, too, so go check out that. Anything else, Weston?
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks for the love.
Yeah, of course. Up the Thunder is so great. Thanks for listening to our podcast. You can follow us at DTD Podcast. Send us an email if you'd like to email, dtdpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star iTunes review. If you're listening right now and you're like, man, I really like this podcast, please go leave a 5-star iTunes review. It'll just take you a few seconds. You don't even have to write anything. You can just hit 5 stars and that's it. Or if you'd like to leave a nice note, that would be great. And thanks for listening.